You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Green Mountain Dental Group. We've had several DNVR listeners switch over to Green Mountain Dental Group over the years and make them their permanent family dentist. Those listeners have personally reached out and let us know how great their experience was and have thanked us for leading them to such a wonderful practice. There's honestly nothing more rewarding than hearing that from our listeners, so please tell us about your experience if you made the switch. If you don't know, Green Mountain Dental Group is in Lakewood, and they're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro area, as well as extreme Colorado sports fans just like us. So head on over to Green Mountain Dental Group today and schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam to get yourself a free Sonicare toothbrush. Welcome in to the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm your host, Rudo, joined as always by AJ with special guest today, Scott Masters, in the building. Talk a little bit of Avalanche, I'm sure, but also to talk about all your work with Lacroix Hockey. How you doing, Scott?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. Exciting times coming up as Avs Dev Camp is right around the corner, so we'll be doing that as well, but
you know, Dev Camp and hockey is actually here when I spend the entire morning on the phone with PR trying to get schedule details and media information and what's the plan.
After a month of nothing, we actually have to work again. So.
Yep. So it's right around the corner. This is our last week of freedom.
Yep. That's it's that time of year, but I'm excited for it. I'm ready. Got some exciting stuff planned coming up, probably. Maybe not. Well, obviously we'll have Dev Camp stuff and then the rookie tournament, but should be good stuff. AJ, I think you probably know a little bit more about Lacroix hockey than I do, so if you want to dive into this with Scott, have at it.
Well, I mean, really, I'll just turn the floor over to Scott to let him talk about exactly what Lacroix hockey is and the goal and the vision and how it came to be.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's relatively really new. We just came about. Eric and I have obviously, Eric Lacroix and I have worked together in our time with the Avalanche, and I had the privilege to work with Pierre at that time and learn from the great Pierre Lacroix. And over time, we both went our separate ways, and I went with Montreal, and Eric did some work in Vegas, and then became a scout and management with the Calgary Flames. So we've always been in contact and talking about what we can do in the future. And the passing of Pierre just recently probably fueled his fire a little bit more to continue the legacy of what Pierre really did over the course of his career as an agent, as a general manager. And so we got together and we decided to start this advising and management company, very similar to what Pierre did years and years ago. We want to make a difference. I'm born and raised in Denver. I love Denver sports. I love what DNVR is doing, and I love the Broncos, Nuggets, maybe the Avalanche a little bit more than than I do today. But I used to watch every Rockies game. I've served lemonade at the Rockies, so I love Denver sports altogether. So giving back to hockey in that way and locally, I grew up in Arvada playing in Arvada Hockey Association and playing at Colorado State, just a club team over the time. And
looks like we lost Joe. You're back. Okay, we're good.
Sorry about that. And advise kids on all levels, from young age to 14, 15, 16, as they develop into what their hockey careers are, Division One, Division Two, junior leagues. And then we're going to position ourselves to manage pro hockey players. We have a great experience with that. I don't know if we're there right now, meaning we're going to take it slow and we're going to do it right. And that's treating kids from on ice to off ice, mental health, nutrition, strength and conditioning. And we have a lot of great things planned for family sports where the Avalanche are. We're going to take over some space there and make our presence felt.
So what's, I guess we'll just stay right there. What's the plan with family sports? Cause that's where they practice. And that's always been kind of a running joke on our show about Lollipop Park, but the carnival yeah. equipment's gone. So what's the plan there?
Yeah. I don't want to speak a little bit out of turn before some dots are dotted and some T's crossed, but the space of Lollipop Park is going to be changed, hopefully, into a hockey performance center. And there's a lot of local ex-Avalanche that are going to be a part of it. It's just not just LaCroix hockey, but a lot of great leaders in the sport are going to be a part of it. And we hope to make it an environment where kids can excel in sports and become a better person and become a better athlete overall. So we're looking at a lot of fitness equipment, some mental health stuff. We're going to do a lot of video work with kids. There's just going to be a well-rounded facility for kids from young to old.
Sounds a lot better than an amusement park to me, for sure.
Yeah, doesn't it? And we're not really affiliated with Avalanche at all. It just happens to be that this facility is big enough to hold. Obviously, the Avalanche are comfortable there. They will be there for a little bit. And we want to be close to the Avalanche, of course. They're a great organization, a lot of great athletes. And so we hope to maybe grab them one or two at a time throughout the year and use the fact that they are local and the kids love the Avalanche, right? And would love to see them in LaCroix hockey.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a great place too. There's plenty of leagues and events that go on at Family Sports Center, all obviously with both the rinks there. So I'm sure that'll work out great. I just want to say I love the logo for LaCroix hockey. The C with the fleur-de-lis in it is, mwah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. We wanted to obviously pay tribute to both Colorado and the Quebec province. And that's obviously strong in the LaCroix family, being French Canadian and Pierre's background. So we just thought it was fitting. We're not really a part of Colorado Avalanche. We're not a part of Quebec, Nordiques or anything about it, but we wanted to definitely add those two aspects, and I appreciate you recognizing it.
I mean, I know where you came from, right?
Or you're able to say the fleur-de-lis, or you know, you probably say it better than I.
Oh no, I think my French is maybe the worst in the state, so don't take any cues on that from me. But
yeah, my best French is usually an F word. So,
well, there you go. I can do that. Yeah, you're speaking my language now.
Relatable.
So
what's what would you say your like what's immediate for you guys? Is it getting FSC up and running and you know, the performance center, and then starting to work with the kids? Is that your immediate goal?
Yeah, I think just getting the word out for one, and knowing people that we're here and this is what we're doing, and attracting some players to get in there. Obviously, we have a little bit of road ahead to physically as far as getting things in shape at, you know, the Lollipop Park. We should probably stop saying that to make us look more professional, but we got a ways for that. But we're able to advise kids, and what we're going to do is we're going to be a little bit different. There's a lot of advisors out there, but we're going to get in rinks. Eric and I both have strong scouting backgrounds, and we both have kids that play youth hockey. And what we're going to offer is that Eric and I are going to go watch kids. We want to be in rinks. We want to watch kids play at the squirt level. We want to watch them grow from squirt to peewee to bantam, all those things. And then that's what we're going to do. We're just going to get out, get rinks, and start seeing kids and advise them on what we think, how they position themselves in today's hockey and what their future holds. So that's our next step, is just be out in the present and rinks and talk to people and try to advise some kids.
When you're talking about kids in a place like Colorado, is there a way to bridge the gap a little bit? Because there is high school hockey here in Colorado, obviously, but it's not to the level of, say, Canadian juniors or even like the USHL around the country. They don't really have that premier junior team. So is that something you guys have thought about and helping kids with?
Yeah, I think what we want to do is bridge the gap between what their current coaches say and what some other programs do tell them too. Is we're taking an honest approach, and we want to tell them the truth. And high school hockey in Colorado is not great. It's never been great since, it wasn't really present when I was in high school. So we know that it's part of the level of, or meaning, try to, the evaluation process that we're going to tell kids, say, hey, this is high school hockey, or say other U18 programs in Colorado. I don't want to really mention names right now just because I don't want
to
make one, but there's some great, great hockey programs right now in Colorado under U18s and U16s, under 16 years old. And they're recruiting a lot of great kids. I mean, when I say great, I mean potential first round draft picks. And Colorado has slowly produced great hockey players, and they're doing more and more of that. And we're going to be able to advise those kids. And unfortunately, probably the U18 and the U16 programs are better than a little bit high school hockey right now, but that's kind of normal too. We're looking at Boston. Boston has better prep schools and better junior leagues than they do high school leagues. So it's not just Colorado, but Colorado's getting better and has grown over the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's certainly one of those weird things, because they do have great college programs. After that, you get into DU, CC, maybe not quite where it was a while ago, but still a very good hockey program. So yep. Just a weird kind of gap that Colorado is looking to close there, I guess.
Yeah, and I think they've closed it pretty quickly. I mean, we're, the kids that I've heard about, coming to Colorado and playing for these programs is pretty impressive. And they should be proud of it. State of Colorado should be proud. Hockey fans around should be proud of what the Avalanche have done over the last 20, 25 years to build this program and build the sport.
So is this going to be your full-time focus moving forward? Is you and Eric working on this project?
We both have committed 100% to this. We're not looking to be a part of any organization right now. So this is our full thing, and we're ready to go. And it's not going to be a small thing. It's going to be a huge thing. We're going to be a little bit of everywhere. Try to do some adult hockey leagues, camps, things like that. There's a lot of exciting parts to LaCroix hockey to make the sport better in Denver and all of the Colorado state.
All right. Obviously, you mentioned both you and Eric have some ties to the Avalanche and the NHL as a whole. What advantages does having that type of experience bring to being a manager, I guess? Is that the right word to call what you guys are doing?
Advisor.
Advisor,
Is what we like. And management gets to the more pro levels. But advising is just knowing what the options are for kids, and knowing their best route and what camps are best. And maybe the junior route is better than college. We know, for instance, kids that go 2 years to junior hockey before they go play college. That means at age 18, they're going junior route. another 4 years of college. That's 6 years before they turn pro. It may be a better option for them. We have the experience with the junior levels. We have experience with NCAA. I worked at University of Denver with the great George Gwazdecki. I've been a college free agent scout with the Montreal Canadiens. I know how that process works. Same with Eric. Huge amount of experience as far as knowing what the best route for kids is. This is, kids are in prep school now. He's well established and thinking of what's best for his own kid. And my kid's 10 and I'm trying to figure out what the best program for him is, right? And he's not as good as some of these other 10-year-olds. So maybe one association is better than another. One coach is better than another. And that's kind of us being around the rink and us being around a lot of people and a lot of connections are going to give us a great deal of knowledge to pass that along to parents and kids.
All right. On that note, we do need to let you all know we're brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery, the official beer of DNVR. You can get it down at the bar on tap, of course. You can also find it at a local liquor store near you. Keep an eye out for their Good Company hard seltzers. Absolutely delicious, but they move fast. So use their Breck Beer Locator online to find it and get it while you can. And then hit up Strava Craft Coffee. The CBD-infused coffee is great for aches and pains like migraines, joint pain, a bunch of other stuff as well. You can get 25% off your first purchase there when you use code DNVR25. Then if you sign up for their subscription service, you get 20% off indefinitely. So be sure to jump on that opportunity. If you got some extra money laying around, you know, maybe throw it our way. Give us a little bit of support. Sign up for an annual DNVR membership. Obviously, it gets you access to all of our amazing content, but you also get things like a DNVR shirt, access to the DNVR lounge on Discord. You get a bunch of other stuff as well, big beers at the bar. So be sure to check us out. Give us a little bit of support if you want to do the 1 month trial as well. I think that we have an offer going on right now that the first month is like 50 cents or something if you just want to see what's behind the curtain with us. So check us out, support us, appreciate it. Second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast here with Scott Masters, talking a little bit of lacrosse hockey, getting into some of the advising and management side of hockey as a whole, well beyond just the NHL. This is an Avalanche podcast at the end of the day, so I do got to ask you if you have an interesting Avalanche story, maybe tucked away that you're willing to tell.
I have a few, and I'm willing to tell them a little bit more than I used to. I always, I guess, similar to the Broncos linemen where they couldn't talk for years, and I feel a little bit free now to share some of my stories and share some of my experiences, some good, some bad. But it's fun to look back on some of these things. And I think, AJ, you wanted to talk about offer sheets. I guess my best Avalanche story is regarding an offer sheet. The Ryan O'Reilly deal. So is that something you wanted to breach now, or is that a third period thing?
No, we can get right into it.
Well, offer sheets are a huge thing. And we were going to talk about Montreal recent, shenanigans or Carolina's shenanigans, but Ryan O'Reilly was, and how, this is how much respect I have for Pierre and how it's come full circle, was Ryan O'Reilly was a great player. And I think he was a huge part of the Colorado Avalanche. And for some reason, they thought their value was more than what the Avalanche were giving. Right, wrong, either side doesn't really matter at this point. I think Ryan O'Reilly has proved himself to be a great player and a great leader. But that whole offer sheet and what was going on behind the scenes and things like that were just phenomenal. And Pierre was kind of in and out at that time. He was president. He was overseeing Greg Sherman. And there's a lot of things up in the air. And Pierre was advising the staff and the group, Eric and I included, and said, basically, once they couldn't agree to terms, to basically trade him within 24 hours. There's no reason to wait. This is Pierre at his best, right? He understood. He saw visions. He understood the team. He understood the dynamics. And he thought that if they couldn't come to terms, it came to a point where they needed to trade Ryan O'Reilly as soon as possible. Well, fast forward 4 or 5 months later, Ryan O'Reilly is still a part of the Colorado Avalanche, and we were unable to make that happen. And there was a lot of trades that were mentioned. And I remember Eric and I were sitting down in the locker room and we're trying to come up with trades for Ryan O'Reilly. And we wrote down every team. We had, you know, A to Z, right? Arizona, maybe if Arizona was a P then, but who knows? It just happened. And one of the trades that we put down was Tyler Seguin for the Boston Bruins. And we both were like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, center, Seguin was an upcoming star. He had his problems in Boston. And we suggested it and it was said, Hey, what about Taylor Seguin? And the people above us, not Pierre, looked at it and said, there's no way Boston trading Tyler Seguin. Well, they did, they wanted to, and knowing, some friends with the Boston Bruins that they would have loved Ryan O'Reilly on that Boston team. And Ryan O'Reilly would have been a great fit for the Boston environment and that team, right? That city, that team, like Ryan O'Reilly's a hard worker, right? And Boston wants that thing. So unfortunately, it didn't happen. And then the offer sheet came. Well, the offer sheet came after agreed trade between the Colorado Avalanche and the Calgary Flames. Greg Sherman and I think Jay Feaster agreed on a trade that day for Ryan O'Reilly. It was a handshake. It was Sven Barchi in a first. And come about it when Jay Feaster went back to, you know, I could be wrong if it Jay Feaster, I apologize for saying it, but I think it was him. And he went back to management and went back to his ownership, and the ownership said, no, we're not going to give up a first and we're not going to give up Sven Barchi. I want these players. I want these assets, but I will give up the assets on the offer sheet. So instead of the trade going through, they sent over an offer sheet, which Ryan O'Reilly signed. Obviously we knew we were going to sign it no matter what. It was not a question. But what happened to it was no one knew about these roundabout rules because it was a lockout and why Ryan O'Reilly had to go through waivers. Well, if anybody knew correctly, like this whole story and this whole kind of circus is like, if we knew and if we happened to be first on the waiver, which we were like second or third on the waiver wire, like if someone would have thought, hey, we can actually
get the assets and then get him Ryan O'Reilly,
get this first and spend, and then pick him up on waivers, right? Would have been an all-time classic worst move in hockey ever, which it almost was. But it would have been classic to know if everyone have, and but it happened so quickly that no one had the time, and it was this uncertain time of the lockout and players going through waivers if they played in Europe that first half of the season. It was just an unreal time, and just an interesting story of how it all played out and the big ifs and what ifs and of what happens in sports, that sometimes things just don't go through and maybe it's better off, and things that are really close that just what if. It was a good time.
That was the top 10 pick too. That was the Sean Monahan pick.
Yeah, it was. And so you can kind of maybe – the ownership wanted, you know, though knowing that that's what they're going to get, and the offer sheet was a little bit better or worse, whatever their thought was, that's just how it played out. So yeah, it was interesting.
That's a roller coaster, one step away from either Tyler Seguin or possibly Sean Monahan for Ryan O'Reilly. What a different world that could have been.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great piece for the what if.
Yeah, because exactly.
I mean, Sven Berchi in a first is not an amazing, knowing how Berchi's career has turned out, would not be like an amazing return, but it would depend on where that draft pick ended up.
Right. And obviously hindsight is 2020, so you can go either route. Just there was a lot of, and Pierre's vision on that 24 hours, knowing his experience on how to do trades, and the whole Patrick Watt trade is phenomenal, and just we had that 24 hours we probably had our best offers on the table, or verbal offers. There's verbal offers every day between general managers, like say, hey, what do you think about Tyson Yost or whatever, you know. It just happens every day, and these trades are not usually happen within a day. It's usually built up over a month or two or weeks, but our first initial contacts or conversations with teams in that first 24 hours were probably our best opportunity, which Pierre knew, and he was right.
On the money, he tended to be, it seemed. So
the Tyler Seguin thing's a deep cut, because that's a big time, like It would have made a lot of sense, just like personality wise, O'Reilly going to Boston.
Yeah.
Sagan coming to Colorado right when they got Nathan MacKinnon, and they already had Paul Stastny and Matt Duchene.
If you could put Sagan anywhere near Paul Stastny, that dude's like an easy 40 goal scorer, right? Like,
yeah.
And I say Tyler Sagan, and knowing that that's probably it was a strong possibility that Boston wouldn't entertain that. Maybe there was more to that package.
Sure.
Sure.
But I know people in scouts and management with the Boston Bruins who were in love with Ryan O'Reilly, and rightfully so. And for the Colorado Avalanche, would have. Just to brush it off as Tyler Sagan's not going to be traded was an incorrect attitude. And
just ask Dallas.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, it worked out okay for Boston moving him. So,
yeah, they did. And he's been a great player. He obviously has his reputation, but you need personalities like that, you know, for sure.
Oh, yeah. More fun in hockey. I'm all for it.
Yep.
So you've been sticking with the offer sheets.
Yeah.
You know, I saw you threw out a tweet in the last couple of days that you think Carolina has gone about this whole Kotkaniemi thing in a disrespectful manner. I'm curious. I'd love to dig into that a little bit more and touch on why you think that. Because we've had a lot of fun on the show. We thought, well, this pettiness is great. These teams hate each other. This is good for the sport, for people to not be so buddy buddy all the time, and to really let that competitor side show. And I think it's interesting that you were especially keyed in on the $20 signing bonus, and that you were not such a big fan.
Yeah, and I think I was personally involved, you know, in Montreal in the time of, let's say, Kotkaniemi. Let's change that to KK. It's just so much easier for me to.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know they're thinking around drafting him, obviously very, very high, third overall. And so I know they're thinking behind it. And I know they're thinking behind what started it all in the offer sheet for Sebastian Aho. And I think the offer sheet is always this, it wasn't done for 5-10 years because people were scared. People were scared of what other teams would do. And this is an example of it, of do I place an offer sheet? I don't want to piss anybody off. I love the offer sheet. It's a great opportunity. I mean, and Colorado Avalanche are a great sign of it. Joe Sakic signed an offer sheet with the New York Rangers. People still love Joe Sakic, and it worked out. And the story behind all that is interesting too, that money came from why the New York Rangers did that offer sheet and thinking that they could do it is because of cash. And very similar to, the Rangers made an offer that was heavily front loaded, thinking that the lower end Colorado Avalanche couldn't match. And it just turned out that the whole thing was found out through a successful movie of Air Force One, right?
Thank you, Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Harrison Ford made it come through for Joe Sakic to stay. But when the Habs, or I, or we, not I, I would just say the Les Habitants made an offer sheet to Aho, it was done in a way that thinking that Carolina couldn't afford not only the average salary, but the money that was involved, the money that the contract that was given to Aho was cash on July 1st.
14 million front loaded or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
That was the strategy behind it, not the average salary. It was just the money that Mark Bergevin thought. I keep on saying we because I feel like I spent so long there, but that Carolina couldn't handle. So in paybacks, they wanted Aho, a great player. In return, they wanted KK, and this was their payback. Even though they wanted KK, they made it to a point where Montreal couldn't match on the average. Montreal has all the money in the world. It's just a matter of, is KK worth 6.1 or 6.2? And it's not this year, it's next year and the following years that this offer sheet has the backing of. I'm a little bit old school and a little bit new school, so I understand the FU and the signing bonus of $20. I wasn't happy with it. I just think it was personal. And I don't think that's a way to run a team. I think Mark Bergevin made the offer for Aho in a professional manner. And Carolina responded in a kind of an FU to one of the greatest organizations in the world, right? The $20 signing bonus. And I don't agree with KK signing it. And I think that KK should have been the bigger person and say, hey, because he burned some bridges, I think. I don't think Montreal was happy with him signing the $20 signing bonus, which, if fans don't know, obviously it was $20 as a sign of the number that Sebastian Aho wears is number 20. And I just think in all levels, it could have been done differently. And I know they tried to trade for KK in the recent weeks before that offer sheet. Maybe they were just fed up with it, but overall, I just kind of found it a little tacky.
So from your perspective, you don't think KK should have signed it with the $20 signing bonus?
Yeah, I think it was personal at that point. I think his agent too, and if we're getting into the agent business and the management business, I would have advised our client not to sign that $20 because Montreal did no wrong in drafting KK third overall, and signing the $20 signing bonus he had the right to say no. Like, hey, give me a legit signing bonus. Give me whatever it may be. But that's kind of disrespectful for the club that drafted me and gave me, you know, playing position at 18 years old. And me as a management and an advisor, I would have said, nah, don't go that route.
From his perspective, was there any reason for him to feel slighted by the organization, or like he was like, it is interesting and not something I'd really thought about until you brought this up, but it is interesting. He was so willing to make himself like a pawn in this little game of back and forth FU between these organizations.
Yeah.
Like getting paid is one thing, but it's the $20 signing bonus where he was totally fine with like adding that in, and he could have easily just said, can I just take the 6.1 million?
Yeah, I think he could have took the higher route. And I think if he would have told Carolina, hey, I'll sign this offer sheet, but can we get rid of this signing bonus or make it a dollar or whatever it may be? But the 20 is just kind of over the top. I think he had that choice. And so maybe he felt slighted by the team by being benched in the playoffs. I don't know. I haven't been there in the last two or three years to know the inside story of what he felt and how he's being treated. He was benched on and off throughout the year. First game of the playoffs, he didn't make it in the lineup. So maybe he felt like he wasn't given an opportunity. But $6.1 million for him at this point is a lot of money. And Carolina knew it. And pretty sure that the Habs knew that Dvorak was available. And speaking from my history with the Habs and scouting the Western Conference, I was a huge fan of Dvorak. And going back on watching him for 5-6 years, I don't have my reports for Montreal. I did a report every game I've watched. I don't have access to him, but Montreal has access to my reports 5-6 years ago, and I was always a big fan of Dvorak.
There's always I don't even know if I'd call it a backup plan, but another option.
Don't think Montreal would have done a passed on KK without knowing that Dvorak was available and the deal was done. And I think that all plays into the fact that it took them the full week, 10 days, whatever it may be, to make that decision. They knew it was there.
Yeah. I certainly agree with you. I don't think Carolina made any friends as far as general managers in the league based on this move. So maybe not the best decision from that point, but from a entertainment standpoint, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just worry about Carolina. Like KK is going to be a great player. It's just a matter of what level he's at, right? Like he's a very intelligent player. And I think that's what teams have been winning off of in the last couple of years is intelligence. Just playing smart. I think why Montreal made it to the finals last year was just a very, very smart team. And Ryan O'Reilly winning the cup in St. Louis, he's one of the smartest players I've ever seen. So KK is that player. He's that type of player, very intelligent. How many he's going to score, I'm not sure. He's always going to be in that 15-20 range. at his best, and then always to be how many assists he gets on top of that. Is he a 50-point guy? Is he a 60-point guy? Those things are to be seen, or DBT, yeah, determined.
Do you think that him in Carolina, like where they have a number of centers right now already in place, like veteran established guys sitting in front of him, is that even a situation that's going to allow him to reach his full potential?
Well, I think it gives him a comfortable level. I mean, it's not easy to play in Montreal. It's a special environment. You need special players that fit that role, and maybe he'll be better in Carolina where it's not as hockey heavy, a lot more football and basketball going on there. I never thought Duchesne was a good fit in Montreal. And I have always said in my reports that Duchesne's a great player, or could be a great player, but he was never going to be successful in Montreal because of the level of scrutiny, the level of just intense atmosphere, and maybe KK struggled with that. Obviously at 18 years old, right? That was a couple years ago, and so young and so hard to play in that type of environment. So maybe Carolina's better where he has some other Finns. He has Aho, he has, you know, a better environment, and maybe he learns off those veteran centers, but Montreal had that too. Montreal had Stahl last year and Corey Perry, you know, like those veteran leaders where every team has them. It's just a matter of fit. And a lot of times it's down to communication and language sometimes.
All right. Guess that is a good time to get into some other language here. I don't know if I... is it safe to say that a lot of Pierre Lacroix's trades were truly perfectly Manscaped?
Are you sponsored by Manscaped? Is
that what that really is? We are. We are indeed sponsored by Manscaped.
This is a bit.
I didn't even know that. That's good. That's awesome.
We got there. Head on over to Manscaped. Use code DNVR20 to get 20% off. Get the perfect package 4.0. They got their lawnmower trimmer. They got a bunch of products, not just below the belt, but things like breath mints, deodorant, face shavers. Whatever you need, they will take care of you when it comes to manicuring your entire body. So jump on it. Get Manscaped today. Make sure you use the DNVR code. Also brought to you all by DraftKings Sportsbook, the number one rated sportsbook app out there. Right now, you still have a little bit of time to get in on their no-brainer bet. You don't even need to be a new account for this one. If you have an account with them, you can go bet on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All they have to do is lose by less than 74 points, and you get to double your money. So DraftKings is basically giving you free money. Just go put down a bet for Tampa to cover 73. It shouldn't be too hard for them to accomplish that. Of course, they have a bunch of other bets as well. If you use the DNVR code when you sign up for a new account, bet on any week one football game, and you get $200 in free bets deposited instantly. So you can jump on that one as well, get a bunch of money to play around with. Again, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. If you are a new account, use the DNVR code when you sign up. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only. Other terms, restrictions, and conditions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. DraftKings is an official sports betting partner of the NHL. NFL, not NHL. Wrong sport, my bad. And, of course, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Scott Masters with us here talking some hockey, getting into some interesting stories, offer sheets and the like. What? So you've been part of front offices and scouting for a couple of teams around the NHL. Obviously you're a Denver boy, but which organization was your favorite? Can I make you pick a favorite?
Yes, but I'll probably take the easy way out and say all of them are unique. I worked for four teams, six organizations to say. Four teams were Florida Panthers, St. Louis Blues, Colorado Avalanche, and the Montreal Canadiens. The other two organizations were University of Denver and USA Hockey over the course of 20, 21 years. they're all different. I would say the biggest honor was Montreal, just because of their history and to be have that title as a pro scout and have that just been given the honor to be that is fantastic. Yeah, there's not a lot of people in the world that can say they were a scout for the Montreal Canadiens, one of the best organizations in the world. But I learned from everyone, all these different general managers, the Doug Armstrongs, the Mark Bergevins, the Joe Sakics, the Rick Dudleys, and great hockey coaches and Mike Keenan, you know, and Ken Hitchcock. And I worked with Jared Bednar in St. Louis when he was a minor league coach in Peoria. Ray Bennett, who is, you know, I've worked with Ray for 7-8 years in St. Louis. I've learned from all these people and these organizations. If I was going to pick one, I would probably, which is a little bit torn because I was super, super happy and excited to become a part of the Colorado Avalanche. And that's another funny story. If you want me to be personal and
if you want to tell it, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I played hockey starting at 4 or 5. My brother played. And so I was a huge hockey fan. And at that time there was no team here, right? Like I'm old enough to say that I knew the Colorado Rockies as a team on ice and not green, right? And I knew my first dog's name was Chico, after Chico Rush. So that's how I know hockey. And they left for their jersey. And we had to do pay-per-view. It's very simple. It's very ironic that people would watch their home team or watch other hockey on pay-per-view, but that's what Avalanche fans are doing now with the stupid Kroenke shit. Oh, sorry about that. But it's, I just grew up a Montreal Canadiens fan, and they winning the Cup in 87 was awesome. Patrick Waugh took over the series. I just became a Habs fan. I became a Patrick Waugh fan. 93, they won a cup again. Then 96 comes around and Quebec Nordiques moved to Colorado. Are you serious? This is great. I'm looking at the roster. Peter Forsberg, Joe Sakics. This is fantastic. Oh, they trade for Patrick Waugh in the middle of the year. This is unreal. Now my two favorite players are Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, and they're playing right in front of me. Oh, and they win a cup. This is great. You know, like all these things come true as a Denver native and as a Denver fan and huge Avalanche fan. Well, 20 years later, fast forward, who am I working for? Joe Sakic. I'm on the golf course. I take a dream. I leave St. Louis, which is a great job to work for the Avalanche. It's a dream come true. I move my family. And I'm on the golf course and things don't work out that year. So we had a short season and Joe Sacco, my boss or my partial boss and Greg Sherman kind of got released, and I'm sitting on the golf course not knowing what I'm going to do. I look on Twitter and my idol, Patrick Waugh, fires me on Twitter. Like, not directly saying, hey, Scott Masters, you're fired. But it was the fact that I'm like looking at it and be like, oh, he just hired. Wait, this is my job. What? I don't get it. And so I went into the office next day and I talked to Joe, and Joe being so awesome, he's like, yeah, I don't really know what's going on yet with this staff, but you can kind of stick around and wait, and you can talk to Patrick later. Well, I'm still waiting to talk to Patrick later. I have not yet to meet Patrick Waugh, my idol. And soon after that, I found a job with Montreal Canadiens. Full circle, right? Canadiens, Patrick Waugh.
Yeah.
Let's say that my Avalanche Patrick Waugh jersey is not hanging up right now.
Can't imagine why that would be. Wow. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That's sports, and that happens.
Par for the course for Waugh's relationship with the Avalanche these days, as far as the front office is concerned, I suppose. But I think the world kind of found out he was leaving the Avs via his Twitter too when he finally left. So.
I think you can get Eric on your show, and I think you can get that done. I think he can tell a lot of stories about Patrick Waugh and Pierre's relationship and how that all trade went down. It's phenomenal on how Pierre got that done, and how long that trade was actually in the works.
All right. That sounds interesting for sure. Yeah, that's six organizations. That's quite a few.
Yeah, it is. And it's been a great privilege in over 20 years, right? And great experience at University of Denver, coming back after two national titles. And I think I brought them down, right, by joining them, and they couldn't do a three-peat. and George Gwajdziecki, a great coach, and still a great coach locally. And we're going to rely on him for a lot of advice on, and he's coaching high school hockey and here in Denver, and he's giving back to the community. And just another example of the of great people that I've learned from.
So to make a not incredibly graceful transition, but I do want to touch a little bit on kind of your thoughts on where the Avs are today, specifically. And this is not an axe to grind or anything. I'm just kind of curious on your perspective, because the Avs went out and got a guy like Curtis McDermott. And it's been sold as he's going to play forward, he's going to play defense, he's a great locker room guy. And from the perspective of somebody that writes up a lot of scouting reports the last few years, has watched a lot of Western Conference hockey especially, what is the real thinking behind going and getting a guy that is a main selling point is great in the locker room?
By having me on, I don't shy away from telling what I feel and what I think where the Avalanche are. I'm not in any means, during the playoffs last year, I kind of vocally and publicly said that I didn't think they had enough in the tank, which I got a lot of flack for, on social media. It was just being honest. I think the fact that you're talking about Curtis McDermott as a main piece of their free agents summer is not a good sign.
I think it's really, really easy to look at their entire summer and say they took a step back. They lost way more talent than they brought in. Yeah. And like all of that, I think it's not debatable. It's not something, it's really just accepted. Like that's just reality. Way more talent left the building than came in.
Yeah.
But I'm specifically curious about a guy like McDermott, just because it is sold to everybody as this is a locker room. He's great in the room. But it's like, okay, well, when you look at him on the ice, he's not any good. He hasn't been any good in the NHL. In 100 games played, he just hasn't been a quality player. So he's great in the room, but when you actually put him on the ice to play the game in which he's paid to play, he's not very good. So how is this a actually helpful for a team with their kind of aspirations?
Yeah, I think what they were missing last year was depth and toughness, and addressing the toughness is McDermott, right? But I think if everything goes right for the Avalanche, McDermott doesn't play in the playoffs, right? He's just not there. And that's where I think the Avalanche won the President's Trophy, right? Great. Maybe if McDermott's on that team last year, they still win the President's Trophy. But does he play in the playoffs? Probably not. Same with this year. Avalanche are going to be a top-ranked team. McDermott's going to be a part of it. He's going to be a depth guy. Does it put him over the top in the playoffs? Does he make a difference? I'm going to say no. He's a great guy, right? Like, there's nothing against him. But if Curtis McDermott is playing on defense or he's playing as a forward, especially in the playoffs, you're probably not as deep as you want to. As being in a NHL locker room for, say, over 1,000 games of pregame talk, postgame talk, coaches speak, and players listening, players talk, and having the ability to listen to the Billy Guerins, the Doug Waits, the Keith the Chucks, even the Gabe Landeskogs in the locker room, right? Curtis McDermott's not going to have a say in that locker room if he's not on the ice. And that's kind of the way it is. If players just become depth, and if he's not playing in the playoffs, then his voice is going to be minimized.
So they traded a fourth round pick for a guy whose voice isn't going to matter. And if he is on the ice, it's not a positive.
Well, it depends on your opinion of Curtis McDermott, right? Like, I think that price is a little high for him, especially if you don't know what he is, if he's meaning forward or defenseman. I've seen this kid when he was a kid. Now he's obviously a huge grown man, right? You know, he's always a big kid, but I remember seeing him in Ontario, Los Angeles, an area where he played for the minor league team, and he destroyed people. Like, he would hurt people. And I remember people being taken out of games because of the way he played. And I remember him being kicked out of games because of the way he played. And so he definitely brings an element that maybe the Avalanche don't have. And you have to add that piece to whatever cost may be. Every organization has to weigh those options where, okay, this is going to cost us a fourth round pick. Is it worth it? What else do we have? What other options do we have? And so they thought the fourth round pick was justified. I think it's a little heavy, being what he is, but regardless, he's a pro.
Okay.
So you don't like my answer, AJ?
No. I'm just more, I don't, and again, I don't want it to feel like I'm trying to grind an axe here with the McDermott stuff, because he is a depth guy and a guy that just may not play very much for them. I was just trying to get some sort of insight on, he's good in the locker room, he's physical, he adds toughness, but if he's not actually on the ice, he doesn't do any of that. And then it's like, okay, well, he's good in the locker room. Some insight from outside, from my seat. When I look at his career and I just look at his on ice results and what's happened with him on the ice, you know, it's really easy for a guy like me to be like, this is stupid. He's not any good. This is a dumb thing to do.
Well, look at it this way. Maybe this will change your opinion on it, is that teams have a full season to play and you can't think that Makar is going to play 25, 30 minutes a game and then ask, you know, the other people, which like was Trevor Timmons last year or the Bo Byrons, to play that much, is because they're going to be worn out in the playoffs, right? So you have to have players. You have to have backups. And so he's a great player. I totally agree with what you're saying, is that it was the fourth round pick worth it if he's not going to play in the playoffs. You may have to just look at it as a whole picture, as he's going to take some of those minutes, those hard minutes, away from other players that may feel like they have to stand up for other players. And so during the regular season, therefore making them a little bit more healthy and a little bit more energized for the playoffs.
So look at it as an investment policy. Yeah. It's like an investment in the postseason where he plays during the regular season. He keeps them a little fresher. Player,
yeah. I mean, again, if he plays in the playoffs, you question their depth, and which I still question the Avalanche's depth, and defensive depth is one of the third pairing.
You get to their seventh D and it gets thin real quick down there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The drop off beyond Ryan Murray and Eric Johnson and Byram is real fast.
And especially, you know, you don't expect Makar to play 25 minutes a night. With Eric Johnson and Ryan Murray, you're hoping for them to be healthy for half the season, maybe even.
So yeah.
It gets tough. But
and that's where he comes in. That's where his value comes in a little bit more. Maybe you do overpay for that type of player, knowing that he's gonna be good off the ice and he's good once again in the locker room and he's not high maintenance, right? So maybe you pay another round for that type of character, and given, you know, overall what he brings.
I do know, I think, you know, not being in the locker room last year, it's a lot harder for me to say, but I do know that in previous years when I was in there every day and you were around the team, a guy like Mark Barberio as your seventh defenseman, a hardworking guy who was really, really well liked by his teammates and had a great attitude, was really positive every day and brought, you know, a really just a good mentality, I think helped them, you know, just as he loved being at the office. He loved playing the game. Teams really liked that guy. And as a seventh defenseman, it was, his value wasn't so much on the ice as it was his teammates really liked him. If McDermott can kind of replace that specific role, I can see where it helps them. Again, not being in the locker room last year, it's hard for me to say what it was like with some of their depth guys. I just don't know. I can't speak on it. But I do know that if I look back at like Barb's, he was really well liked and the players really liked him and he had a great attitude and the coaching staff loved him for that. And he was very comfortable in that specific role. And
that's, yeah, that's important that players like Barb's and say Curtis McDermott, where it's easier for the coaching staff to manage, right? You don't want to bring in a seventh or eighth guy that has an attitude that thinks he deserves, you know, the fifth or sixth. And I remember Tyson Barrie had that problem young at his young age. And Tyson Barrie is obviously a completely different player, but
yeah,
he was, I wouldn't say difficult at the time, but he needed to be managed. He needed to, if he was scratched that night, this is obviously really early on in his career, was that he needed to be massaged in a certain way and talked about like, hey, that you're okay. He was frustrated. He was mad. That weighs on people, to his neighbor to the right, his neighbor to the left. His negative attitude is slumping, right? You want Curtis McDermott to be like, yeah, I'm the seventh defenseman. I'm not playing tonight. You know, pat the guys on the ass and go play. And I support you. And so that, I think that plays a factor in how valuable they are.
It's easy to forget sometimes all these players are people at the end of the day. They're not robots out there. Yeah,
they all have their strengths and weaknesses. And a lot of the times, and I think AJ and I can have another conversation about mental health and how it affects and how people come across in their everyday world. And pro athletes have a hard time mentally just knowing who they are and what they are on the ice and off the ice and what they bring. And they struggle with it like everyone else does. And it's a very, very tough sport physically and mentally.
I would say that for those fringe guys too, it's hellacious. The constant threat of going up or down to the minors. Yep. And the guys that do go up and down constantly, that's really, really difficult for guys because it's hard to get comfortable. It's hard to be in a rhythm. You're chasing a dream that you're this close to achieving full time, but you're never really quite there. You're never really comfortable in your own skin enough to feel like I've made it and I'm there.
Yeah.
So I think from that kind of perspective, I can understand where the team's interest in a guy like McDermott would make a lot of sense with his reputation as being very, very well liked by teammates. And why some of them would be excited to play with him, even though they may not actually play with him very much, like in game.
And one of those strong backup positions would be the goaltender, right? You want a goaltender that knows his role, knows his position, is hungry and loves to play. We know Patrick Waugh wouldn't be a great backup goalie, right? I mean, it's just Martin Brodeur wouldn't be a great backup goaltender. It's just the way their makeup is and what they expect. Not that Curtis McDermott doesn't expect and that he's not great. I mean, it's not that, but I think every person is fit for their roles or should. And that's what makes a good pro is knowing who they are, what they bring to the team and team player and team aspects.
Okay. Are you good, AJ?
Yeah, I have to go buy a new phone.
All right, there we go. We gotta wrap stuff up. So, Scott, if you want to take the floor, tell people where they can find you, anything else you want to mention that you're working on, LaCroix hockey, all that stuff.
I appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we can do it again. And we have, like I said, a lot of things, great things coming up. We hope to have some, you know, create some podcasts ourselves where we have these great old alumni for the Avalanche and try to get some Avalanche some players in there and just talk about hockey and the community and what's going on and just so many great things that we're looking forward to. And LaCroixHockey.com is where we're at right now. And there's some information that at least you can contact us on, you know, Twitter or phone or whatever it may be. Like, we'll get in touch and we're just trying to talk to as many people as we can. If parents have questions, if kids have questions, we're going to pick up the phone and talk to kids and to have resources like Eric LaCroix and all the connections that he has is fun and it's exciting times.
All right. Awesome. I guess that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Thank you, everyone, watching, listening, however you consume the pod. Thank you again, Scott, for coming on. It was a great time hearing some of those stories. Really appreciate it. We will be back tomorrow. I'm not sure what we're talking about tomorrow, but you can find us same place, same time, 1:30 p.m. Mountain. Until then, chat, we will talk to you all later.